I follow my mind, I never go wrong. I would have sing that song, it wouldn't take so long. Never, never could do wrong. Baby, if I follow my heart, I'd live by emotions, in my every notion. It will lead me astray now, each and every day now. Baby, if I follow my heart, my mind is a fine mind, my mind is a right mind, my mind is a clear mind, clear mind. If I follow my mind, I'll never go wrong. I wanna sing that song, it wouldn't take so long. Never, never could do wrong. Hey, hey, if I follow my mind.
The great Jimmy Cliff from Jamaica with If I Follow My Mind. That is from his 1976 album, Follow My Mind. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And we're going to just polish off what we started yesterday, talking about what are we to think at this time in this election and the craziness that is happening. We can't seem to get a handle on it because so much is happening at the same time. And we want to be able to at least keep track of things so that we don't feel overwhelmed, or we don't feel that things are just escaping our understanding. We talked yesterday about Tweedledee and Tweedledum, or Tweedledum and Tweedledee, a metaphor for our political system, which seems to have near zero tolerance for embracing the idea that in a highly developed society such as ours, the apparatus of government should reflect its complexities. But that is not so in the United States. When it comes to politics and elections, we are creatures of habit. Our tastes are set. We're not into newfangled flavors. We're fine with just two, Democrat and Republican. And maybe there might be some room for one or two more, but that's it. Generally, we find with these two flavors, a Democrat and Republican. New flavors are just not American. They're just not what we want. For decades now, voters have been reluctant to look beyond the two-party system for new political choices. And so today we'll discuss how this has retarded and continues to retard progress. Are you up to it? 888-874-4888. What is this utter devotion to just two parties? And we can't seem to break away from that formula. We are very uneasy about it. It works well in some political circles because the electorate's points of view can easily be managed, or more easily be managed. And we don't want to give people any ideas that their ways of thinking make sense. And we should try some of these things that they're talking about. We should try incorporating them in our national politics. That is an absolute no-no. What is the fear of going beyond this two-party system? What are we likely to find out or do that would be so harmful to this country? Why is there such a resistance to a new political party or a new political idea? Why are people so resistant, refusing to even give it a fair hearing before they throw it away as a garbage idea? Have we lost a lot by not giving consideration to these things? Are we too easy to qualify these new ideas as ideas that are not in keeping with whatever it is that people say, you know, our way of life, whatever that is? I've asked people about that. What is our way of life? And they have great difficulty describing and telling us what it means. So that's what we're going to talk about today. What is it about the United States society, our society, the American society, that we are not particularly enthusiastic? And in some cases, we're not even willing to extend ourselves and look at a new idea and see whether it has merit or even application to our way of life. What is the obstacle that's in our path? Ed from Jamaica, you're on the air.
Hello, Utrecht. How you doing?
Okay, you sound much better today.
Yeah. How's it going?
Okay.
Well, you know, I'm here. Basically, I was listening yesterday and I didn't get a chance to comment because I was kind of busy. But to be totally honest with you, the problem with America, as far as I can see it, because I was in the military, I traveled around the world a little bit, seen different cultures and different ideas of what your political or what your social responsibility is in different countries, Germany, Japan, Korea. Americans are lazy and Americans are ignorant. And I say that partially with myself included. The only reason that I have a little more knowledge than some people is because of my family and my background in the military, which exposed me to things that certain people don't see. But Americans are very lazy. They're comfortable with the status quo. And that's what the powers that be count on. America wasn't always like this. In the 20s and 30s, if you look at history, we had a viable communist movement in this country. We even had a viable Aryan movement in this country. Henry Ford was a member of the Nazi Party. And a lot of the eugenics ideas came out of the American eugenics, went to the Nazis. So there were both sects, there were both ends of the scale that we had in this country. We had a Bolshevik movement in this country. We had a workers' movement in this country. It's just in recent history, people have become uneducated, I believe, partially by design, partially by just sheer laziness. And people have become comfortable with minute solutions. They don't want to do the work. They don't want to invest. And it's all over in sports, in entertainment, in our politics, in our life. They don't want to make that investment. They don't want to go through what I call the growing pains that make you better. They don't want to make the investment in the political system, which, if you look at it with a mature eye, it's all your life. All politics is the allocation of resources. We choose a government. We have resources in the country, and we choose this government to make decisions to allocate these resources and represent our desires on the whole. And people don't want to make that investment. They'd rather depend on one personality or one person or a group of people and let them handle it and cry when things don't work out. But in the end, you get what you pay for. If you don't want to put the work in, you're not going to get the results you desire. Hello?
What? Yeah, I'm listening. I listen very intently. Sometimes you think, boy, I thought I had drifted off to sleep or something.
But that's it. I mean, I heard people talk about money yesterday, and people talk about the lack of ability or the powers that be locking us out, David and the other callers. You know, I'm not knocking anybody, but I mean, that's always been here. This system was started by rich landowners who didn't want to pay taxes to the crown. This system has, the only thing about the American system that, in my opinion, differs from all others, you got room. You got room to make a move. And if you look throughout history, from the labor struggles of the 1920s and the 1930s to the Great Depression to the Civil Rights Movement, this is the only country where you got room to make a move. That's why people take from America. And that's why the democracy, different forms will go around the world, because this is the only country where you can make a move. It's the only country that didn't have a monarchy. It's the only country that didn't have a bloodline hierarchy that you had to fight to get through. In this country, you can make a move. Might not be a good move. It might not be the best move, but you can make a move. And once you give that up, once you say, I can't make no move, then that's where you're at. You're lost. You might as well go find someplace else.
But it seems like a pat conclusion that Americans are lazy, or they just don't want to do the work.
Well, I mean, that's my opinion. I mean, I base my opinion on what I've seen, and I base my opinion on the past. You got to look at history. If you don't look at where you come from, you ain't going to look at, you ain't going to know where you're going. Look at in the past, there were massive movements in this country. I mean, a lot of times it took a lot of pain for the movement to come around. But two things in America, you got to get at least 10 to 20% of the population to go with you, number one. And number two, it takes a long time. Things don't happen in America overnight. It's always going to be a struggle. And the moment you stop struggling is the moment they're going to take it, the moment that the powers will be going to take it back from you. After the Civil War, we had the Reformation. We had black congressmen. We had black senators. We had black businesses. Slowly but surely, the people that didn't want it, the powers that be, worked the system and take it away from you. You got to stay on top of it. That's life, man. You know, if you don't work, you ain't going to eat.
Well, you started us off on a solid footing today. Let's see how people react to what you offered. Thanks so much for calling in and making your contribution today. David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Yes, I'm getting right to the point, Yatrice, on your question. As I see it, when this settler colonial country was formed, people came from monarchies from Europe, and at this time, at 2020, the monarchy has been replaced slowly by a ruling class that is not the monarchy from Europe, and the monarchy has won. That's what we're in now, and this situation where you have just two viable parties, so divisions of the same group. And I've never said that they are the same, but they have given the people the illusion of democracy that we do not have. And, you know, so they've gotten the people just where they want them. And we go through this charade every once in a while of having these elections, and the candidates essentially are controlled by those who rule, and people think they have democracy. You say it enough, as we know, and people start believing it. So that's what we have. And my main thing here that I want to get across, this is not going to change by just voting. People have to get that through their heads, that having these elections and voting for these slugs to run for these offices is not going to do it. It's going to take more than voting to make it so that the country is here for the benefit of the people who live here. And when I say people, I mean the masses of people who live here. It's not going to change just by voting Republican or Democrat.
So what has to happen, David?
What has to happen is things beyond this voting, and I'm not telling people not to vote necessarily. I'm saying it's going to be demonstrations. It's going to be actions by the people to make the change. It's not going to change by voting Republican or Democrat. People have to understand that they have to get in the streets. They have to demonstrate. They have to overturn these slugs that are in the legislative, the judicial, and the various divisions of this country. And it is not a democracy. It was never set up to be a democracy. And it was set up for those at the top to rule the masses of people. And they have had fallbacks where they had to give up things, such as things that happened during the Depression. And people are not educated. They are trained here. I stopped calling people educated. The people are trained, and some of them were trained, even have those pile higher and deeper degrees called PhDs. So the people have to rise up and do other things, maybe boycotts, maybe demonstrations, and other things that have to be done to get this turned around, so the people are benefited by the government in this country. The government in this country is controlled by the rich and powerful, not by the people, and the people have to get it. There's no reason to have money deciding what's going to happen, and those at the top doing all the ruling and tricking the people into believing they have some democracy that would benefit everyone.
Thank you. Thank you very much, David, for your call today. New Orleans is next. Jesse, you're on the air, and welcome.
Hey, Mr. Trees, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, I just want to say thank you for all your great work. And David from Brooklyn, Henry, Ed, Ma'at, Duke, I listen to these people. And they are really informed people, and I agree. The thing is, in my opinion, it's like, this is the corporatocracy, all right? But the point I wanted to try to make was, you know, right now we should be on a sprint to converting to clean energy, because our Earth is in a major transitional time. And I don't hear anybody talking about that at the debates. And no third parties or independents or ever represented at the debates, you know, because the two parties, the unidivision, as David calls it, with two different divisions. I think it's a uniparty with two different divisions is how I put it. And I agree. And so how do you change that? That's the question. I just don't know. But I'll tell you this. I don't think answers are as important right now as the questions, asking the pertinent questions, because people aren't asking the right questions, you know. So, I mean, that's what I got. And I'm grateful.
I like how you put that. That's what I got. That's what I got. But let me ask you, what is it that we're so afraid of? When I say we, I mean the American society is so afraid of in moving away from, or just even long enough to investigate other systems that might provide solutions to problems that we have been experiencing for a long time. What is it that gets in the way?
I think the illusion of choice is pretty good. I think Ed called it, and I think David called it. You know, it's the illusion of choice, which you really don't have. This is not a democracy. It's never been a democracy. You know, and people are going around because their education has got dumbed down, You know, they took the education away from the people, really, and disempowered them. And then now the healthcare system, so they're basically killing them off slowly. And it's like, man, like, how do you win in this situation? And I got the question. I don't have the answer right now, other than I just garden in my backyard, grow stuff, and say, man, I can't believe how foolish and criminal our government is. And American people are just now starting to wise up.
But you're wised up, too. What caused you to wise up?
Well, I had to start paying attention to the political process and realize that they weren't working on my behalf. They were working against me. And it's old rules, old history. But I'm an abolitionist by nature because I think all this stuff should be wiped out, period, and start over. The reform stuff, I ain't trying to reform this system. That is bull crap. That's bull crap. You can't reform a broken system. And systematically, racial, biased, colonial, imperialist, however you want to put it, it's just pretty ugly. And I can't believe I live in this country, to be honest with you. And, you know, I'm from New Orleans, but I lived in New York half my life. So I know a little something. And it's always a pleasure to hear you, Missy Chief.
Oh, it's a great pleasure to have you with us today and contributing as meaningfully as you have been. So thanks so much for calling in, and let's keep in touch. Let's have you in our midst as often as possible.
Will do. Much love and peace to everybody. Power to the people.
Marcus from Wisconsin, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Ms. Lee. Thank you for the excellent discussion. I listened to the entire program yesterday, most instructive, and this is the part I found instructive. You know, Emmett Goldman, the great American anarchist, said back in the 1920s, if voting actually changed anything, it would be illegal. And, of course, the unspoken part is that's why they let you do it. Because it doesn't change anything. Now, why doesn't it change anything? In the course of the discussion, up until this moment, it's interesting. Every single caller that I heard complained that, of course, nothing can be done because the rich fund the system the way it is. It was referred to a number of ways, the status quo, the ruling class, but the word capitalism never once came up. In other words, we're just aware enough to vaguely sort of understand who's causing the problem and the fact that they have inordinate amounts of wealth, but we are completely blind to the system that produces them. In other words, we just accept it as environmental. We can't even conceive of questioning it. That's how propagandized the American population is, even on a broadcast network like PRN or, you know, read anarchist journals in the United States or something. And it's the same thing. There are passing references to capitalism as a problem, or that the wealthy don't want to maintain the status quo. But any discussion of organizing around the project of getting rid of them, of ending the system that produces a ruling class, is unthinkable to Americans. That's why your political system is exactly the way it is. That's why no matter who you vote for, the rich win the policy battle every time. If you read the business press over the years, and you can go back as far as the 1920s, late 1800s, and read the business press, and they come right out and they say so. They tell you this. The only people ignorant are the population. They have accepted the capitalist story that there is such a thing as free markets. And people sort of psychologically accept that this, yes, there's a ruling class, but they should be there. They earned the right to be there. We believe the story that they earn the money that they control the world with. It's completely false. There is no such thing as free markets. There never was. The capitalist system is completely dependent on infusions, huge infusions regularly of public cash. That's why the government doesn't change, because if the population ever had its wishes represented in the system, the money flow to the rich that makes them rich would stop. You see, people might think, well, why not something for ourselves? But you can go back to Adam Smith's Wealth of Nations from 1776, the major tome of capitalism. And he says right there, he talks about the maxim of the masters, the economic masters of the world, which is all for ourselves and nothing for anyone else. Now, it's not a secret to academics, but if you explain it this way, they're going to lose their jobs. By the same token, if you on your program or any PRN program or any media program anywhere in the United States were to do an extended, deep analysis and criticism of the capitalist system, you would be gone. Bernie Sanders, who is not even remotely a democratic socialist, campaigned on the as a socialist. He got huge numbers across the United States. The population actually likes the idea. They want it. You look at the polling data. It rates very high. There isn't one socialist pundit in U.S. media, not one. Not one. Now, what does that tell you? That tells you the people with the money who control the media system don't want that discussion. What you want is irrelevant, and that's why nothing changes, because they have convinced you that they are more powerful than you are. They are not. There's no evidence for that. It's because you believe in them. You've made yourself dependent on them. You rely on, you know, they tell you if you don't buy our car or our clothes or our crap, that you are not, no one will love you. You won't be successful. People will think you're strange. This is the key that they understand is the key to their wealth. That's what makes you go along with it. Why did the labor movement happen in the 1930s? You know, why did it happen from the 1870s to the 1930s that the working class around the world was active and fighting in its own interests? Because our modern media propaganda system was not sophisticated enough to deal with it. Now it is. That's why you're the prisoner of this system. That's why you can't do anything about it. That's why nothing changes, because you are completely, cravenly dependent on it. And you know it.
Wow.
Now, the question is, what do we do? How are you going to confront this? That's the question. So in our politics, we have no theory, we have no goals, we have no objectives, it's just endless, empty gab. It means nothing. It, in the end, it comes to nothing. Go back and spend the day sometime. It's not a reflection on you. It's a reflection on politics. Go back and listen to all the discussions of during the primaries of how critically important all of this was. It didn't mean a thing. Not a thing. Why do we sit still?
That reminds me, today I was going to select some music, and the music was, "It don't mean a thing."
That's right. It don't mean a thing because it don't swing. And if it don't swing, it don't make a breeze, and we don't stay cool.
Well, thank you, Marcus. That's quite
thank you, Ms. Lee.
A polemic you delivered to us today.
Thank you.
And loaded with a lot of stuff that we should tear apart and decipher and continue to discuss, because I think you're right on the money. Thanks for calling in and contributing. At this point, we'll take a break and come back to your questions and comments at 888-874-4888. Right after this. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.fm. We're having the continuation of our discussion yesterday about what is preventing, what is the block that gets us so comfortable, in fact, quite assured, when there are just two parties in this country. With all of its miscellany, all these different people thinking different things, having different ideas about solving or at least addressing effectively many of the problems that we experience from day to day. But we can't tolerate that. We have zero tolerance policy for that. We can tolerate the Republican and the Democratic Party, and that's it. Don't bring any strange ideas into the mix, because you're a communist, you're one of those people in the flank, the left flank. You are doing things that are not American. You're thinking un-American, and We have this thing nailed down just right. Republicans and Democrats, pick one. That's the way it's been for quite a few decades now. And that's the way we like it. Those are the two flavors we just love, Republican and Democrat. So it's refreshing to hear people offering their own analysis based on their own observations, and I think they're on the money. E from Edgewater, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Yatrice.
Hello.
How you doing?
I'm okay. How's by you?
Yeah, same here. I share something with you that I get a kick out of when you mention it, you know, about the music, and you talked about you go to the movies to see Jerry Lewis movie, and you got to be treated to a Count Basie's orchestra. And I had the same experience. I plead with my mom, take me to the movies, let's go see the new Jerry Lewis movie, Cinderella, whatever it was, and she would take me, and we'd have great fun. Laughs, that silly man who was a genius and who introduced us to all this great music that you play today. I was so glad to experience that.
Thanks. Now tell us, what is, in your view, what is preventing us or has prevented us for so long from going beyond the Tweedledum and Tweedledee choice?
Well, I think it's because the brainwashing that we've been put through since we were born has been so extensive. It's just like it's it's almost impossible to break free from it. And it takes a great amount of mind control of your own to counteract it, to be able to think freely, like a David from Brooklyn could do. There's not many people that can see through this. And you played an interview about a year ago. Martin Luther King with Sander Van Oker was doing the interview. And
yes,
he said, the dream has become a nightmare. This is back 1964. Why did Martin Luther King see something in 1964 that we're not, that we weren't able to see up until just recently? I mean, what did you think he meant by that? The dream has become a nightmare.
Well, I think he meant exactly that. That things evolved in ways that many of us don't understand, because not everything is literal. You see, there are things that are happening on all these various levels to achieve a shared goal. We don't know all of these things. We're not familiar with all of these levels of operation. We're not familiar with the intentions of all of these various levels. So he was an organizer and a very educated man. So he was blessed with the power, on top of everything else, the power of perception, and was able to make sense not only of the environment he was in at the time, but the environment that was coming. He was very clear about that. We didn't get it because we thought of him as just being prophetic as a function of his ministerial work. We just thought, well, he's a holy man, so he sees things that we can't see, so we'll accept what he says. But in fact, what he was saying was quite evident and even palpable. We could feel it. We could feel it.
Right. Now, I was 9 years old when John F. Kennedy was murdered. And then I knew right then and there something fishy's going on with the government and with something's not quite right here. And I think Martin also, you know, tied that into it. But after he said the dream became a nightmare, he also said, we don't want welfare checks. We don't want low-income housing and projects infested with drugs, roaches, and rats. We don't want that. We want good jobs. So why did we fall for it? Why did we let Johnson lead us to a wrong place? Why didn't we listen to Martin? I mean, he was always optimistic. He always saw a good future ahead. And then all of a sudden, it's shocking to me that I never heard this interview that you played. And when he said that, I said, yeah, this is what I've been thinking since I'm 9 years old, that the dream has become a nightmare. The dream I was in, watching Jerry Lewis movies and having fun, all came to an end at 9 years old. I don't know what happened in Trinidad. You were only 10 years old. I was nine. What was the reaction of John F. Kennedy's murder?
Well, it's the same reaction as it was all over the world. It was shock, and it was a kind of paralysis that set in, anger as well. But most importantly, it was that people just did not know what to do, how to react. What was it that they were supposed to do in that time? And that's really what we're trying to focus on. Other than the designation Republican or Democrat, do you have any other label that you wear as a political definition of yourself?
What I'm worried about, Yatrice, is suppose tonight you turn on your lights and no lights come on. You go to your sink and you turn on the faucet and no water comes out. You run to the store, it's all boarded up. There's hundreds of people out there and there's no food. What are you going to do then? Forget about Donald Trump. What are you going to do then?
Well, give your own question a try at an answer. What will you do then?
Well, panic's going to set in. I'm going to try to keep just what are you going to do? The only food you got is what's in your house. And then you know somebody's going to be coming for that if there's no food.
Well, we're kind of off the topic. I want to get you back on topic.
I'm sorry. I'm gone because maybe if you played that interview again for us, like you played another thing for us last week, maybe we need to go over it because, you know, Martin Luther King was important to all of us, and we sort of let him down. I think he knew that he was going to be murdered, and there was really nothing he could do to stop it. I'm sorry I went off course. I'll try to do better the next time.
It's okay. You did quite well. Thank you so much for your contribution today. Thank you. Ray from Florida, you're on the air.
Thank you.
Hello?
There are 7 choices for presidential There were 8 choices in New Jersey, and in California there were only 6 choices. Now, the party names in New Jersey with their 8 choices are, of course, Republican, Democratic, the Constitution Party, the Green Party, the Libertarian Party, the Party for Socialism and Liberation, the Alliance Party, and the Unity Party. Now, I can't give you an answer to your primary question as to why it narrows down to 2, but I was surprised that they weren't the same candidates in all the states, but they vary for anywhere from 6 in California to 8 in New Jersey. That's all I had to say.
Oh, I thought you were going to go on and tell us about
the
car.
No, as I said, I don't know why the coverage is so narrowly focused just on the 2, but because there are a lot of other hopefuls out there.
Yes. Well, in any event, you brought something to our attention that we didn't have in play, and that is in California, you had quite more people on the ballot, at least giving people the choice or the illusion of choice, that which is also important. But thanks so much for bringing that to our attention. Thank you. Duke from New Jersey, you're on the air.
Hey, Utrice.
Hello.
Okay, so I got into the apartment in the middle of your program, so I didn't hear what other people said, but your question was basically, what has prevented us from straying away from the two-party system, right? That's basically what you were saying?
Yes. Why are we so loyal to it?
Okay. And then, you know, that's a complicated question. And you really got to dig deep in order to find the answer to your question. And what I bring up, what I think about, is I can remember years ago listening to Armand DeMille, and Armand was talking about the Enneagram, right? The different personality types. And Gary Noel also did this great series about life energies. I don't know if you've ever listened to that, but I've said this to you before, but people don't want to accept it. The masses of people are going to follow whatever the dynamic energy presents to them. So, for example, if Jim Clyburn in South Carolina said, we're not going to support Biden, we're not going to support Bernie, we're going to start our own party, and then named it whatever he named it. If he had done that, he would have opened up a door to allow the masses of people to follow in a new direction. Right now, the hip-hop entertainer, this guy, Puff Daddy or whatever his name is, he's talking about starting a new political party. Okay, that's not going to go anywhere because he doesn't know nothing about politics. But when you have somebody of that dynamic, aggressive energy, people will follow. I don't agree with the concept that it starts from the ground up. I don't agree with that. Some things work that way. Some things do work that way. But when you're talking about the large picture in politics, and I use Jim Clyburn as the perfect example, because in that precise moment, he held in his hand the ability to direct the direction that black political thought in this country could have gone. And he did what was predictable. So to me, the answer to your question is not that simple. You really got to study why people and the masses of people do what they do or why they don't do what they should do. Because most people are followers. I think it's what Gary called adaptive supportives or something like that. I don't remember. But I'm going to say this, and I'm going to get off the phone real quick. Latrice, you with me?
Yes, I am.
Okay. I can remember when I was a little kid. When I say little, I don't know, maybe I wasn't quite 15 years old. I was in Philadelphia. And I can remember watching a program where the journalist Carl Rowan, I don't know if you remember Carl Rowan. He was black.
Very much so. Very much so.
From Chicago. Very conservative. And I can remember in this interview, he said he was predicting a race war, he said. And he said he doesn't know when it's going to happen, but it's inevitable that it's going to happen. And I remember asking my mom, Mom, what is he saying? What is he talking about? Like, is that really going to happen? Right now, Utrice, I don't see any way that the Democrats or Biden can pull this off. I'm pretty certain that Trump is going to win this election. He's going to either steal it or he's going to win in a landslide. Because there's no energy behind the Democrats right now. It's just people don't care. People are voting against Trump. They're not voting for something. And that's not a good look. And if that happens, I'm afraid what's going to come next. I'm just afraid what's going to come next. You know, I was thinking it's a possibility that Biden could pull this out if something crazy happened before, say, the last week of October. And you know what? Something crazy did happen. Trump ended up with the coronavirus. And guess what? Even that didn't stop him. Even that didn't stop him.
Well, from my point of view,
we still don't know
when he ended up with the coronavirus. We have no idea. We have not been given any proof.
That's exactly right. We don't even know. That whole thing could have been a ploy. You're absolutely right. I thought about that. But he's willing to go to those depths to stay in power. Biden is scared to even come out. So how can he possibly win?
Biden is scared to come out. I don't think so.
He's scared to come out. But here's the thing, Utrice. I understand he's scared to come out. He's almost 80 years old. I wouldn't want to take that risk either. Because one thing we know
is
that there is something out there that's killing people. We don't know exactly what it is, where it came from. We don't know the science. I wouldn't take that risk at 80 years old. Would you? Would you?
Yes, you're there.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you, but we lost.
Yeah, no,
you
I said, would you take that risk at 80 years old?
Okay, so let me ask you. Bottom line, what is it that prevents us or so discourages us from even attempting to move outside of these parameters that have been set for us, namely...
I think I already answered that, because the masses of people need some type of leadership to direct them out. And I know you don't agree with that, but that is fundamentally how I see it. The masses of people need something to lead them out of it. And that's why I use the example of Jim Clyburn in that critical moment when he could pick between Bernie Sanders and Biden. He could have stood up and said, you know what? We're not going to give our vote to either one of these people. We are going to start something new. And then he could have called a conference of all the black leaders around the country, and they could have sat down in a room and figured something out. And you know what? If they had did that, the masses of people would have followed. But our leadership doesn't do that. We have a congressional black caucus. What have they done? What have any of them done?
Well, they've done quite a bit. It's not a total loss, actually. The Congressional Black Caucus has done quite a bit.
Not in my opinion.
In service of our community. And we really need to recognize that.
Okay, you trees. Yes, they're politicians. They've had to do some things. But in terms of answering your question, instead of taking that power and say, we're going to direct our power to a new political party for our tribe and whoever wants to come in with us, that's the way they should be moving. But they're not doing that. They get in these comfortable positions.
You can't stand,
and say,
let's be fair, you're on the outside and you have your observations. You have no idea what is going on the inside.
I do have an idea, because I would see it in my community. I do have, how can you say I have no idea? I do have an idea. I would see it on TV. I would see it in my community.
No, I'm talking about decision-making that is so profound and life-changing. It's not just a decision. It is the implementation of things. We have a group, again, I'll go to the Congressional Black Caucus.
They're useless, you trees.
Do we support the Congressional Black Caucus? No, we don't.
Yeah, we support them. We elect them in over and over.
No, but that's,
and as far as I'm concerned, they're useless.
We have this attitude that, well, they're elected, and they're elected primarily on the basis of black votes. Therefore, they owe us. We never take into consideration, or rarely ever take into consideration, our own obligation to keeping those institutions that support us. Because when time comes for major decisions to be made, these decisions often involve a lot of money. To print a flyer costs
money.
We
have the money, Utrees. I don't think you hear me.
No. Don't say you have the money. The money does not come out as fast as it ought to, and sometimes it doesn't come out at all. We have fallen down on our obligation, too, and we have to see that. We can't deny it. We have left many of our leaders who were absolutely dedicated to public service and particularly service to the community, but we never supported them. And then we got angry when they basically told a line because they have no independence. We did not give them that.
Hey, you trees. When you study Dr. Claude Anderson's Powernomics, one of the first things that he says is that in this country, our tribe, we generate a budget of about $1.5 trillion.
I have to interrupt because we're out of time. I'll invite you to come back and finish your conversation, but we really are out of time. We need to develop a perspective that is panoramic. We always look to blame this one isn't doing this and that one isn't doing that. But the finger of blame seldom points at ourselves. We leave these people unprotected. We leave them unable to enact some of the things that they want to enact because they have no money. They have no funds coming in. And we just sit back and say, well, you didn't do so and so, you didn't do that, you didn't do the other. And that's not fair. We have fallen down on the job big time. And we owe an explanation for that. But thank you. You raised some very important points today. Thank you all. I am honored. I say it all the time. I am honored by your camaraderie and your presence on the air that you share your thoughts with us. And thank you so much for keeping up the standard, a very high standard of conversation and interplay. I really appreciate the effort that you make to do that. Let's meet up again tomorrow. Same bat time, same bat channel, as they used to say. We'll talk again tomorrow. Bye-bye.